Good afternoon, Your Honour, Commissioners. First of all, thank you for coping with my wanderings around the South Island today. Yeah. Went to Christchurch to refuel and then had another go at landing. And thank you also to my friends who obviously were able to deal with timetable changes and so on. So here we are. As well as a set of closing submissions you're going to be given,
Thank you.
A copy of a case. Mm-hmm. You may recall that last week when we were talking about the priorities question and specifically about Section 124, I discussed a number of practical examples where Section 124 had been relied upon. Mm. There were three cases that were relevant. Mr. Welsh gave you two of them, and I've now provided you with the third. Mm-hmm. The third is the Clutha example, and I have tagged paragraph 18, where there is reference to the fact that court describes contact as having authority to continue to operate under section 124.
Right.
So, turning to my legal submissions, I hope they're pretty brief. So starting at paragraph one, the Minister for the Environment generally supports the proposed shape of PC7 as it is emerging from this hearing. I noted in opening that there was a risk that this plan change attempted to do too much, namely to anticipate the full land and water plan that is to come, rather than providing a transitional framework. In my submission, the balance is now about right in what is proposed, subject to a couple of matters that I addressed below. The controlled activity pathway is incentivised, the non-complying rule is a tough gateway, and the genuine exceptions to the 6 years default duration can be provided for appropriately. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Your Honour. I seem to have missed a few people.
Is it not being distributed?
They have been distributed, but I think that we might have missed the council in the process of distributing.
All right.
Yes, I'm sorry. Just Mr. Moore and Ms. Melhoff got missed in the process.
Mr. Moore.
They were too quick going out for their cup of coffee. So the issues that I want to address are set out below: scope, the objective, the priorities policy, community water supply, hydroelectricity generation, and the non-complying rule. Mm-hmm. So starting with scope, in his submissions of the 7th of April, Council for the Otago Regional Council raised an issue as to whether the relief sought in the supplementary planning evidence of the Minister's planning witness, Mr. Ensor, was within the scope of the Minister's submission on PC7. In respect of a longer duration consent for hydroelectricity generation and drinking water supply. He submitted that an exemption for these activities could not reasonably have been foreseen as a direct or otherwise logical consequence of the relief sought in the Minister's submission. Counsel for ORC, Mr. Moore, helpfully set out the principles that apply to scope issues in those submissions. And what I have done in the paragraphs that follow is basically to pick from those submissions, because I don't disagree with anything that Mr. Moore said about the principles that apply. And so what follows is largely taken from his submissions, though not in as full a version as he provided there. So essentially, and I think probably, Your Honour, if I start from probably from 8, in giving its decisions, giving a decision on the provisions of PC7 and any matters raised in submissions, the Court must be satisfied that there is scope to make any such amendments to PC7. In doing so, the Court must consider whether submissions received are about PC7, and if so, any amendments are within the scope of a submission such that the Court has the jurisdiction to make the amendments. The terminology used in section 149(e)(1) of the RMA for a submission to be about a matter is different to the terminology used in Schedule 1 of the RMA, which requires that submissions be on the proposed plan. I agree with Mr Moore that the requirement in Section 149E of the Act for a submission to be about a matter should not be approached any differently from the approach developed in case law for determining whether a submission is on a proposed change. And the scope of submission should be approached in the same way. So turning to amendments then, which are within the scope of a submission, they must be fairly and reasonably within the general scope of an original submission or the proposed plan as notified or somewhere in between. The question of whether an amendment goes beyond what is reasonably and fairly raised in submissions will usually be a question of degree, to be judged by the terms of the proposed change and the content of submissions. And this should be approached in a realistic, workable fashion rather from the perspective of legal nicety. The courts have recognised that decision makers need scope to deal with the realities of the situation, and a legalistic interpretation that a council can only accept or reject relief sought in any given submission is unreal. Approaching such amendments in a precautionary manner to ensure that people are not denied an opportunity to effectively respond to additional changes in the plan-making process has also been endorsed by the courts. Mr Moore explores this in more detail, but ultimately the proposed changes need to be appropriate in response to the public's contribution. So turning to the relief that is sought by the Minister for the Environment, in my submission the position taken by Mr Ensor is within scope. It's just discussed, to be within scope, a submission must be within the general scope of an original submission. It does not need to be within the scope of a particular submission. The matters Mr Ensor was discussing, which will be addressed further, were squarely before the hearing in the submissions of Trustpower Limited in the case of provision for hydroelectricity generation and the territorial authorities in the case of community drinking water, both of whom sought durations for these activities longer than 6 years. Secondly, the relief sought may be amended to reduce the ambit of what is sought. The Minister's original position was that any activity seeking a duration of more than 6 years be prohibited. As discussed in my opening submissions, the Minister revised that position to non-complying status and to leave open that some specific activities, properly assessed, may warrant a longer term. The position of Mr Ensor was consistent with that position. Had the Minister reversed these positions, started from supporting a non-complying rule, and then sought to amend that to seek prohibited activity status, that would indeed have been out of scope, as it would have expanded the relief sought. And then thirdly, the Minister, as well as the local authority and the Attorney-General, have greater flexibility in terms of the scope of their submissions. Section 2744A limits the evidence which may be called to within the scope of the appeal, inquiry or other proceeding. Most Section 274 parties face a further restriction in Section 2744B and may only call evidence on matters arising out of the person's submissions. But the joinder status of the Minister is not subject to Section 2744B. Therefore, the Minister is only restricted by the scope of the appeal, inquiry or other proceedings. So in summary, the Minister's position responded to additional changes in the plan-making process proposed by other parties, and any amendment that may be made to PC7 to provide for hydroelectricity generation or community drinking water, as supported by Mr Ensor, is already reasonably and fairly raised in submissions.
Now remind me, what was the objection precisely to Mr Ensor by the Regional Council?
Essentially, flicking back through, the expression that Mr Moore used was that an exemption for these activities could not reasonably have been foreseen as a direct or otherwise logical consequence of the relief sought in the Minister's submission.
And these activities, that's hydro and TA?
Yes. Mr Ensor's evidence addressed, and in fact the whole position has changed, of course, since then, and the scope of what's being sought in relation to hydroelectricity and I think community drinking water has reduced. You know, what is being sought has truncated somewhat. But what Mr. Ensor was doing was exploring in his evidence a rule that would effectively act as an exemption that would take those two activities certainly out of the non-complying status. And what has evolved is a rule or a policy framework that will actually provide for those activities directly.
But Mr. Ensor himself, though, he was seeking to carve out an exemption for hydro and territorial authorities.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And, community drinking water and hydro.
It's a separate rule to provide for territorial authorities, community water. Okay. So, and those would have been non-complying activities under the original framework, or he was trying to, he was trying to carve out an exemption for
He was carving out, yes. Yeah. That was the way in which it was framed, to carve out an exemption for.
And that was not something which was said to, either arise in terms of the minister's own submission or in terms of whether it was on the plan change itself, the exemption, or both?
The criticism was that it wasn't within the minister's submission.
And your submission is that it was within the submission of territorial authorities and trust power, but that the minister may call evidence beyond his own submission.
That is part of the argument. Mm. I think the argument really is whether or not the questions of scope mainly arise as to whether or not this is a left field, a sidewind that's come from nowhere that public participation couldn't have foreseen. And my submission is that whether it was in the minister's submission or not, these issues were clearly before the hearing, and in fact that's what Mr. Ensor was responding to.
And there is no difficulty in principle with the minister responding to the submissions of other entities, like for example trust power, the territorial authorities, notwithstanding that the minister himself has not made any further submission in respect of that. So the fact that there's a submission somewhere, the minister can just simply any party can call evidence in relation to a submission made by another party. It doesn't matter whether they made a submission on the same provision or a further submission on the same in response to that other party's submission. They may call evidence. Is that what you say?
Some parties are a little more limited than that. And that's where the significance of Section 2744B comes in.
And so for other parties, so who can't avail themselves of that provision, what then? Because I think we've heard, even this morning, that some parties point to a submission being made by third parties. They've not made any further submission in support or in opposition to the third party's submission, but say, because that submission is made, therefore, they may pursue the matter themselves.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I think
it might be, but I don't know.
In terms of, I think the position is different in terms of making submissions and in the calling of evidence, and that's where Section 274B comes in.
We'll get to 274B.
But in terms of the ability of parties to make submissions on issues that are before the court, then yes, in my submission, people can do that, because once an issue has been fairly raised and it is before the court, then the issue is on the table. The rules around scope are designed to ensure that someone doesn't seek something that is, I've described it as left field, but something that couldn't have been anticipated at all, not necessarily in that particular submission, but couldn't have been anticipated, wasn't fairly raised and before the court. Which is my last sentence, I think, that what Mr. Ensor was addressing was already reasonably and fairly raised in submissions and therefore was before the court. No one was being taken by surprise by a sudden discussion of that matter.
Yeah, and in your submission, it did not matter that the matter was fairly raised, say, by territorial authorities or by trust power, and that the Minister didn't make a further submission. That what is important is that it was raised by somebody.
Yeah. And the issue was a matter that the court was already considering. Mm.
All right. Okay.
It's a fairness principle that underlies the whole basis of scope, really.
Mm-hmm. But then the Minister has greater flexibility because of Section 274.
Has more flexibility around evidence.
Yeah. Okay.
Not the Minister alone, but a restriction that applies to others does not apply to the Minister and a couple of other significant parties. So turning then to the objective, and I'm aware that this discussion has probably moved on ever since I finished writing this last night, and that I know that there are, I think, more versions potentially floating around, and you may have heard more today. But this is where I, with the assistance of Mr. Ensor, was last night anyway. The content of the objective has been the subject of some debate in the latter stages of this hearing. I'm at paragraph 16. Of the two versions proposed in the joint witness statement on the 21st of June, of the planners' panel, version A was supported by Mr. Ensor. In the court's discussion with the panel last week, there appeared to be concern that 10A.1.2B of version A was enabling an increase in the scale and duration of take, even with the rider that this should only occur where the risk of additional adverse environmental effects was low. Ms. Dicey discussed possible amendments to the objective to meet this concern. A revised objective as described by Ms. Dicey and reviewed by Mr. Ensor could be, and I've attempted to take, with Mr. Ensor's assistance, what Ms. Dicey described and then to formulate it, because the issue, as I re-listened to the discussion, was around, I think, the linking of the word enable with the matters that are now drafted here in my new 10A1.3.
Well, it's apart from enabling, it was the idea that you could have additional adverse environmental effects. Thus, your baseline environment can be one which is an environment that is over-allocated in the sense of water quantity and water quality, or is, as I put to the planners, is an environment which is degraded or degrading. But that we were only interested in if the risk of additional adverse environmental effects is low. So, you know, the low risk of additional adverse environmental effects relative to baseline environment, which itself may be called into question. It just seemed to me to be problematic. And again, this was the issue that I put to Ms. Dicey, and she responded as she did in the transcript. We'll show that. What if you've got an application? What if your application is to move from an inefficient to efficient irrigation system? Thus, you're actually reducing historical use, and you're reducing historical use and potentially changing the contaminant profile of your irrigation area. Should those two reductions be weighed against to secure those two reductions, the evidence has been you need to enable irrigators to have a greater area of land so that the move to an efficient system is economic over a longer period of time. And so there becomes this trading and balancing off, I thought, where the phrase additional adverse environmental effects was problematic. You could well be reducing aspects of the adverse environmental effect from primary sector taking use of water and undermining at the same time the land and water plan to come in terms of an allocative regime. In fact, I thought this just opened the door consenting pathway under a non-compliant activity rule for most, most or many primary sector consents. So it seemed to me hugely problematic, no Section 32 analysis. And I wasn't satisfied with the response of Ms Dicey, which was, you know, old Section 104D, there would be lots of considerations. The language itself was fraught with difficulty.
And she was describing how at least some of the language difficulties could be unpicked. And one of the ways that she suggested was to take in version A, I'm looking at the joint witness statement, 10A1.2, and separate that out into 10A1.2 and 10A1.3, which would have the effect of disconnecting the word enable from B of 10A1.2, which was part of the problem in terms of assessing additional environmental effects and so on.
She might have seen it that way, but I think the greater risk for me was the risk of around the words additional adverse environmental effects. I did not know what that meant, and it seemed to be opening up a consenting pathway ostensibly through a non-complying activity rule, but actually the other planners said, oh no, this was the setup for community water, for hydro, for RDA, for the stranded assets, and for primary sector discretionary. So yes. In other words, it was the setup for the full gamut of relief sought by a number of parties who are wanting to have more than 6-year durations. That's as I understood their evidence, and I was very concerned about that they should have approached the joint witness conference that way, because right. I thought the court's directions were clear. But so you don't need to be addressing me on the language of ensure to enable. You need to be addressing, I think, what could come under the phrase additional adverse environmental effects, whether that's now a baseline environment of the existing environment, or looking at the additive.
We had about two versions of that particular phrase last night, and in the end, I've stayed with it as Ms Dicey expressed it. An alternative way of actually approaching that expression would be to say something like, where the risk of further adverse environmental effects over any that may already exist is low. It's cumbersome.
Yeah, why in principle, if because this won't be the same in all places and everywhere in Otago, at least, or maybe it is, but why if you've got a degraded or degrading environment, would you contemplate an increase in scale and historical use or a long-term consents?
I think this
Why
is,
are you contemplating that?
Well, I think it's there for the reasons you described before, that it provides that additional policy to recognise that there may be circumstances, potentially, if you can make it through the non-complying rule, where it may be, the council's decision, appropriate to grant a longer consent. And it's at least foreshadowing the possibility of that and putting some parameters around it in an objective sense. There are various things, if you're going to do that you have to ensure are met, thresholds, baselines, whatever. And one is the question of risk.
Now, and I'm well familiar with the phrase risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. My concern is, though, it has been applied to a baseline environment which may be degraded or degrading, and it's the additive risk from that baseline. Why is that okay? I don't know. And what is wrong, and I suppose the other question for you is there something fundamentally wrong with the setup as it currently is in version 9 for the non-complying activity? You may not get, you probably shouldn't under an avoid policy, get more area or increase in historical use and take or
What's the other one?
Duration. You may not get more of that, but there may yet be an activity which is not actually triggering one of those three elements, which should be appropriately considered under a non-complying activity rule and under the tests.
Version B didn't provide for that either, though. In fact, the way version
B... don't think version B opens the door for increases in all of that?
The issue with version B, as I understood the discussion last...
I didn't like that either. I thought they were both problematic.
Those were the two that we were playing with, because the problem with version B is the language around compromising the implementation.
Who knows? It doesn't mean anything. And I think I've reflected that back. You would have to be something of an oracle to know what that would actually mean, and anyway, why did you need to say it? Because the first objective... surely is actually encapsulating what the outcome should be.
So
to be clear, I didn't actually like either of them, and I didn't understand properly why these things were being even contemplated. Ms. McIntyre for Ngāi Tahu said, well, you don't really need a version B if this was the setup for stranded assets. It didn't occur to her that you actually needed it. It didn't occur to me that we needed it. But version A was being supported by other parties who were wanting to set up RDA and discretionary activities as well as arguably something, a pathway through non-compliant. I don't recall, am I right in thinking there's no Section 32 analysis of that, of the version A, version B?
I can't remember whether the plan is provided one either in the end. We could go back.
And that's why, you know, Mr. Anderson's objective, and I only like the second sentence, is useful, because it actually then provides a hook to hook in stranded assets, community water and hydro. If those are the exceptions, then I thought it was a nice entree word into that, if that's what the outcome was.
Yes. We seem to have reached the point that I reached in paragraph 20, Your Honour, actually, which is...
You didn't like it?
Just delete 10A1.3 altogether.
To delete what, sorry?
Just delete 10A1.3, which is the either the version B version, which talks about not compromising the implementation.
Oh, well, good. Because I thought you were trying to argue for it.
Well, no, not for version B. Mr. Ensor is...
Yeah, well, not for version B, but even for, version A and version B to be deleted. Is that what you're saying? You're actually saying delete.
Certainly, if even the version of 10A1.3 that I have provided, which is kind of based on what Ms. Dicey was describing, if that doesn't work either because of the problem with additional adverse environmental effects and the very specific reference to increasing scale, and you'll notice that Mr. Ensor's suggestion was, let's call a spade a spade. We're talking about irrigated area. Let's call it that. And or the rate or volume of take. But if those are too precise, in fact, they're too specific for the purpose of this particular limb of the objective, then I agree. We're probably better to lose it altogether.
I can foretell all sorts of implementation issues in this region.
Yes. Well, the problem is, this is lawyers drafting, and maybe it's not always a good idea, but... we swing between, you know, the very specific, talking about scale or rate of take and so on, and then terms that become quite loose and quite subjective, like not compromising something or trying to evaluate the risk of additional adverse environmental effects. And it's a very difficult thing to actually apply.
Look, it is. But I think the question for you, though, is if you didn't... Assuming that Ms. McIntyre is right and there's no need to have a setup for the stranded assets in an objective, there wasn't any need to do that. You could have introduced the RDA rule quite comfortably without having that setup or signalling that setup in the objective. Then is there something fundamentally... problematic with the non-complying activity rule, that needs to be fixed? If there are exceptions, is there something wrong with that non-complying activity rule?
No, because I think the way we're approaching the only two exceptions that really are realistically... I'd add stranded assets in that, but the two that I'm interested in, which are community water and the very limited hydro that we're now talking about, are provided for outside the non-complying rule.
Yeah, and it's so the then if you're not caught within the exceptions, you're non-complying.
No.
It sounds like you probably aren't going to get resource consent if you are trying to seek a longer duration, bigger area, or more greater historical use, because they all have the word avoid attached to that. So you should be avoiding that.
Yes.
But if you're not in those three categories, then isn't it just, well, what's the effect on the environment of whatever else it is that you're seeking or proposing?
There's been a bit of discussion about that, hasn't there, around Section 104D and the fact that the avoid policies are strong and meant to be strong.
And they're meant to be strong.
So it's going to be about the adverse effects on the environment.
Yeah, and so do we have a frustrated gateway, or, you know, is the gateway test frustrated in any way with the plan as it presently is written, which of course is not reflecting, you know, ORUG's interests and the interests of others but that's a different issue. Right now, is this plan, does that non-complying activity work? There is a...
It is a very tough gateway. It's going
tough,
to be very hard to get
open,
through.
Just even a... Yeah.
I hadn't thought it was impossible. I had thought it was tough. And and I think that's where the Minister wanted it
he
to
wanted
be.
He wanted it tough. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
At the risk of getting into trouble, my next heading is the priorities policy.
Oh, you've been redrafting. You should show Mr. Moore this, all the planners.
This was floating around.
This is really funny because, I mean, I just didn't see. I mean, this, I know we usually see in planners a way to do their bit without the interference of lawyers. But on this one, you know, it's like, I think it's an impossible job. I think it's both a legal and a planning issue, and that everybody had to come together, which is, you know, why when we got the first JWS and the planner said, oh, they hadn't actually received direction from the lawyers, we said, oh, forgetting at the end of the hearing, we really had to push that one on, which is why we referred you to the facilitation of Dr. Somerville, not because he had any solutions, but because just to get the thinking going. So I'm really, you know, this is really saying, I hope you talked to Mr. Enzor about this before you went back into that planning conference. I mean, because both disciplines need to be reflected in this.
What I'm about to talk about, he had been working on drafting, as I think everybody had, taking her honour's words last week, hearing the comments on them and kind of using that as a base and working from there.
Mm.
This was before whatever Ms. Malhot circulated last night to the planners of which they have been talking about today. But I think it is useful because he's taking these ideas into planning workshop that they've been holding. But I do want to, before we get into the drafting, I do want to read you paragraph 21.
Yep, sure.
The Minister supports enabling the operation of priorities to continue during the transition period, being the life of PC7. The effect of their exercise in the past has been to create and maintain flow patterns whose loss will have unquantifiable in-stream effects. This is particularly so where ecological conditions protecting galaxid species are at stake. The specific places where this is important cannot be known with any certainty, but a general approach to maintaining priorities in the interim offers the best insurance against inadvertently degrading the environment further until the new land and water plan. And just before I go on, I want to pick up on something that my friend Mr. Winchester was talking about before, when he said, in the context of discussing priorities, that there had been a focus on galaxids, which had developed as the hearing has gone on. And, of course, that's right. Galaxids have become the sort of poster child for the in-stream effects. But my point is that it's actually bigger than galaxids. We don't have all the information, and it doesn't seem that we can have all the information.
Mm.
But we do know that flow patterns have created particular circumstances. Galaxids are one aspect of it. But we don't know, we actually don't know what else. But we can know that if we allow those flow patterns to change fairly abruptly, there will be in-stream effects that we can't quantify. And those in-stream effects are likely, we expect, to have an adverse environmental effect. And we can protect against that, at least in the short term. Mm. So, in my submission, it's wider than the galaxids issue.
Mm.
Though that certainly is where the focus has landed.
Yeah, dear, and I understand why people have latched on to the galaxids. But when you say why, did you have anything in particular or not beyond the galaxids? I mean, you just don't know, do you?
We just don't know. I think that's our problem. But we can contemplate that there are stretches of water which may dry up if the priorities are taken away, or equally may have water, may have flow where there hasn't been flow. That's going to change things.
Mm. Okay.
So, in terms of a new policy, again, this is Mr. Ensel putting his thinking cap on. He is of the school that says that we need to be clear in the policy what it is that it's doing, but he was quite keen to leave the detail in terms of the relationship between the priority holders to the entry condition and to the reservation of control discretion. So he came up with about three versions, really, which I've included here for the court's information. As I say, this will have fed into, I hope, discussions today, and I'm sure life will have moved on already. But he was thinking in terms of the first one, water abstraction may need to cease so as to ensure supply to any downstream permit holder having priority. The second one, a slight variation on that, when requested, water shall not be taken so as to supply any downstream permit holder. And then the third version, when the application is to replace a deemed water permit that was subject to a right of priority, the replacement permit shall provide for this priority. That was actually his preferred one, because he said it just says what it is, was where he was coming from.
Oh, hold on a sec, let me read that again.
He was, and the entry condition and the reservation control discretion are pretty much as was, he hasn't changed those, as were floating around last week.
Oh, I see. I don't.
Setting out the relationship.
No, your third policy just looks as if you can replicate some statutory right in a policy, whereas the other two, I think, are more correctly attempting to do something new.
Yes. He was aware of that, and he was saying to me, "Does the third policy raise various issues in your mind, etc.?" Whereas the others focus on, you know, the downstream, the supply of water, ensuring supply.
Disappointed if it came back like that.
I don't. I think that's very unlikely, actually. Mm. I think he might be in a class of one on that one.
All right. Good to hear.
But his thinking was at paragraph 23, the preferences for the detail of the relationship between the priority holders to be addressed in the entry condition. And the matters of discretion rather than the policy itself. And he was trying to find an alternative to the problematic reference to residual flow, which I think we've all accepted as a defined term in the operative plan and doesn't have the same meaning as it's used here. I'm not averse to a reference to sufficient flow. It is helpful in ensuring that the priority is only exercised in circumstances where the water is needed and flows are low. But I'm also aware that, and this was from Mr. Ensor, other factors than abstraction can also prevent flows being sufficient, even when the exercise of priority is occurring.
You mean when the water body itself is in decline naturally? It's, yeah.
Climate change or, well, or just no
it's
rain?
It's a hot summer with a little rain. That's all I'm thinking of. So yes. It's actually natural. So it's nothing to do with abstraction, but... Could be.
We did explore that and question it, and they've got a permit that allows them to take the water.
Yeah.
And they're not bound into any priority system.
Yes.
But then they, surely, when they were getting their consents granted, had regard to the impact or the effect on their...
Well, one would hope so, but one can't be certain.
But one hopes so, but anyway.
But I understand that the desire to link to sufficient flow is to ensure that the exercise of priority is not being done where it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's both the language in the old Act and its sufficiency. I don't know, it just seemed to me to be plain English, really. Everybody, I would think that the downstream farmer would know what a sufficient flow means in terms of is he able to or she able to take water to meet all or some of their needs.
I think they're back
working with... I couldn't think of a better word. I looked at the thesaurus, and I just couldn't come up with a better word than sufficient. And it needed to, in a sense, lack precision, because this isn't a precision instrument where we were saying... or even suggesting, remotely suggesting, that a residual flow should be, figured out and formally adopted for each of these consents. It wasn't like that. We weren't suggesting that.
In terms of a question that I think Your Honour asked last Friday, and I'm at paragraph 26 now, as to whether there should be a replacement of the subpara E or a standalone policy. From a drafting perspective, it would seem simpler for it to be standalone.
Yeah.
Right, turning to the question of community water supply, the two exceptions, if you will, that were flagged by the Minister at the beginning of this hearing. Council for the Territorial Authorities has submitted in closing that under Section 130 of the Local Government Act 2002, a territorial authority has an obligation to provide water services, which includes water supply. Water supply is defined to include the provision of drinking water. Council for the TAs also points to the relevance of the National Policy Statement on Urban Development 2020 to the urban environments within the region and to the National Policy Statement for Fresh Water Management, where drinking water is a Tier 2 priority under the NPSFM objective. These provide guidance as to how community water supplies should be provided for under PC7. Council agrees. I agree with the general thrust of the submissions of Council for the TAs. The combination of the Local Government Act and these national policy statements mean, in my submission, that there is an obligation on territorial authorities to deliver drinking water. The changes that have been recommended by Mr. De Pelsmaker in his evidence in reply and in the 7th joint witness statement, allow for the granting of replacement consents with a greater rate of take and volumes that exceed historical use. However, these are still to be short-term consents, and Mr. De Pelsmaker conceded last week under cross-examination that effectively the territorial authorities are being asked to put future development of necessary water delivery infrastructure on hold until the Land and Water Plan has been promulgated. My submission, that's not an appropriate outcome of PC7, and therefore Mr. Tooze's proposed rule, 10A3.3, 1A2, ought a similar effect, because, I understand that this rule is still moving. I think perhaps it happened this morning, I'm not sure. Ms. Irving is looking again at the content and shape of that rule.
Ms. Irving was to come back to us at lunchtime or after lunchtime, so we'll probably go back to Ms. Irving to see what her client's instructions were.
Right. But the concept is supported with the proviso that consent duration expires no later than 31st of December 2035. And in that sense, I think we have moved quite a long way from the beginning of the hearing, when a limited consent duration of that kind, as I recall, was not under contemplation. So it's not 6 years, but it's certainly not 35 either. It's a much more limited period than that. So turning to hydroelectricity generation, the second activity that Council has previously suggested needs some special provision is hydroelectricity generation, given the National Policy Statement for Renewable Electricity Generation. And in particular, the focus in this hearing has been on the replacement of the four deemed permits held by Trustpower as part of the Waipori and the Deep Stream schemes. While Mr. De Pelsmaker in his evidence and reply states that he remains of the view that new and existing hydroelectricity generation activities should remain limited to 6 years until the new plan comes into force, he also provides a backup option in relation to these deemed permits. The backup option is a discretionary activity rule that would limit the duration of these replacement consents to 2035. In closing, Council for Trustpower has accepted limiting its relief to these four races. Again, at the beginning of the hearing, we were talking about something much, much bigger, or potentially much bigger, but has suggested that a term to May 2038 be provided for, as has been sought in the applications already lodged. The significance of 2038 is that that date aligns with the renewal of the wider Waipori scheme consents. It is unusual for a planning document to include provisions specific to certain assets, as proposed by Trustpower and accepted by Mr. De Pelsmaker, but in this instance, in my submission, it's an appropriate course. It limits the rule, in particular, to matters on which the court has heard evidence, and it provides certainty as to the scope of the rule. Council has reviewed the reasons Trustpower offers in its closing submissions for why a longer consent term, the 3 years longer, should be available for these consents. As Council for Trustpower notes, longer consents may not be granted. The status sought is restricted discretionary, and therefore Council has discretion to decline following a merits assessment. The proposed rule, which is now, I think, Annexure C, as provided to the Court and Trustpower's closing on the 1st of July, we need to get the dates right because I know it has moved. That rule is supported. The scope of the exception is limited, and providing for the replacement consents to expire in 2038 rather than 2035, as Mr. De Pelsmaker accepts, will sink the consents and enable integrated management and an assessment of the schemes as a whole, which in my submission is an important consideration in terms of RMA management. And again, just to address a comment to my friend Mr. Winchester's comments, he talked about, I think in response to questions, he talked about the uses, and I think he was probably meaning volumes, being very significant in terms of why he thought hydro should not be accepted in the way that I've just suggested. And the focus of his concern is, of course, that we are locking in hydro generation on a scale in a way that is inappropriate for PC7. In my submission, because the relief that Trustpower is seeking is so very contained now, just the four deemed permits, and really 3 years longer than Mr. De Pelsmaker was willing to support, it has the advantages of bringing together, as I said, integrated management in a way that's efficient but also enables the effects to be properly considered, that warrants the exception that's being sought, the limited exception that's being sought. And then the last thing I wanted to address you on was the non-complying rule, and really to say what I said just a few moments ago. Mm. I noted in opening that the intent of PC7 was a narrow plan change with a framework intended to operate as carrot and stick. Controlled activity, the carrot was created to provide applicants with certainty and to be a relatively easy gateway, the quid pro quo for which was a short-term consent. For those who wish to pursue a longer-term consent, the bar was to be set high. I submitted that the non-complying rule needed to be tougher, and Council supports the non-complying rule that's now before.
And so we don't have to turn our minds to Mr. Enzel's quite detailed policy in support of a non-complying activity rule, I think, that he gave in evidence. And
Mr. Enzel?
Mr. Enzel. Where he had I can get it up in front of you, but he had quite complex, I don't think it was the rule, he had quite a complicated policy, I thought, supporting a non-complying activity rule, or could have been just complicated non-complying activity rule, which required decision makers to look back at some minority wire and a whole heap of other things, so we don't need to be concerned with that now.
No. In my submission, no. I think we have dealt with the key things in the framework that more or less is now sitting before the court.
Yeah, and that framework's more or less, it is more or less articulated in the ninth JWS, and to the extent that it's not, then it's dealing with matters such as Mr. Page's relief that he's seeking. But more or less, the minister is on board with the ninth JWS and where the provisions have got to.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Yes, sure.
All right. That's really helpful. Have you got any questions?
No, I don't. Thank you. Very clear.
Questions? No questions from me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Safe journey back tonight. Well, unless, of course, you're going to be listening to Mr. Moore tomorrow.
See what Mr. Moore had to say.
Good. Okay, so that actually does take us to you, Ms. Ewing. You were to get your client's instructions and come back to us.
Yes, and I have been doing that. Mm. I'm just waiting for one of the councils to come back to me, and I was planning on jumping on the phone when Ms. Dixon finished.
Mm.
I have circulated where I got to on drafting up the options that we had discussed yesterday to Mr. Moore and Ms. Malhot, so they've had the opportunity to review that. And so far, the instructions that I have received are that outline is finding favour with the councils. So there's just one more of them that I need to touch base with. But I'm anticipating that those instructions will align. And I've got a memorandum drafted up to file as soon as I've confirmed those.
Mm. And did you get that wording through to the Regional Council Friday?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And has that wording been checked by your planner?
Yes, I have talked it through with Mr. Twos.
Has he seen the wording?
Yes, he has. Yes. So I put something together, sent it through to him before I circulated it to the Council. So he has had input on that.
All right. Okay. Right. So, what do we do to do if your council doesn't give instructions?
Can I answer that question if that's a problem?
Well, they've got to give instructions before Mr. Moore gets on his feet tomorrow,
yes,
don't they?
Yeah.
Mr. Moore, have you got any thoughts about that?
I have a view in terms of what the position that's going to be advanced by the council tomorrow, which doesn't necessarily require the final position from the territorial authorities to be confirmed.
Yes.
It may well be, and if instructions are to be confirmed, we may not be that far apart, but in any event, I'll be pursuing the relief which the regional council's seeking in the context of community water schemes.
Okay.
So I'm happy.
So you're not particularly prejudiced. You've got an answer, if you like.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you should chase. I mean, I know it's like being stuck in a hearing. You should chase away and let us know at 9:30 what the story is. But at least four councils are in favour of that. I mean, that much you can say.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. that leaves us with Corrie's, unless you want to talk about something else.
I did. I wanted to talk about the starting time tomorrow.
Oh, what time would you like to start?
We've got a fair bit to do and also a fair bit to print in the morning. So
fair
a 10 o'clock start would just give us a little bit more time.
No, that's fine. I think how long do you think you'll be on your feet?
That's a good question. realistically, tomorrow we've got two things to do. We need to potentially hear back from Mr. De Pelsmaker reporting back from the conferencing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, just on that, I haven't yet seen what has been delivered or whether...
Have
I
you
just
got
don't
something
know.
From him?
I've had an email. I haven't actually read it. That can only do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Is it a joint witness statement? Right, there's a joint witness statement being circulated amongst the experts at present. Mm. My understanding had been that Mr. De Pelsmaker would report back and essentially present the outcome of that joint witness statement.
We want to see it before he does, and then it's just not fair to the court to do anything other than that.
Quite, so we'll file that as soon as it lands. And then...
He will be landing it tonight. Because he was meant to land it. There was meant to be something in tonight.
And I think that's certainly the... It is drafted. Mm. Sorry, has it been circulated for signature? It's being circulated as...
You're just waiting on signatures.
Perhaps. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So it certainly will be filed, was my understanding. Mm. So that'll obviously need to be considered. And then in terms of how we deal with that tomorrow... Again, it actually depends on the content, and I don't know what they've said, so it may be beyond or different to the provisions that I certainly have in mind, and that from a lawyer's drafting perspective, I had thought might be appropriate. So there is at least a set of provisions that I was minded to pursue, but still I'd like to understand if there are some issues with those, and for transparency, we've circulated that drafting to the planners for consideration.
And everybody was happy with what you circulated, or with... To me it's both, as I said, both legal and planning.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's then potentially two ways to go about that. I could address what comes out in legal submissions from a drafting perspective. But I'd say that subject to the caveat, I don't know whether they've strayed a long way from that, which I was otherwise going to pursue in closing. So I need to actually see what's been landed.
So you wanted an 11 o'clock start?
Would that help? Probably would help. Let me just think. Yeah. So I think we will get through everything tomorrow. Realistically, closing submissions I had in my mind an afternoon would be plenty, so 3 hours worth. And realistically, just thinking about that, in terms of the core or the key topics, the case for Plan Change 7, the national policy statement for fresh water and its interrelationship with other national policy statements. We've then got the issue of priorities, then community water schemes, hydroelectricity generation. And in relation to those two topics, I can signal that there will be some further lawyers drafting in relation to how the provisions can be accommodated.
That would be good, actually, because Mr. Twos has got some really good thinking, but it's not nailed.
He does, but I should signal that whilst what Ms. Irving has sent was a helpful starting point, there's certainly been some adjustments made to that for reasons I will explain in the submissions tomorrow. So I'll need to step through that drafting.
There needs to be a lot of adjustment to what he had. It was problematic, but
yes.
Might that be available ahead of time so we could do some homework?
Oh, that's a good question.
Very helpful.
It would be.
If it could be.
You were tweaking a couple of bits in there. We could file that so it's available perhaps first thing in the morning, tonight. And I should signal also the objective in terms of the version of the objective that some of my learned friends have been referring to that I'm likely to pursue. I have a version of that, so that's the essentially the forest and bird addition to objective two in directive language covering the exceptions. I'd be happy to circulate that advance as well, so you can at least have a chance to think about that.
Anything major that's being done, that would be helpful. And what about the schedule? Because there were some issues with that.
Now, this is the schedule 10A4.
I've forgotten the number. It might have looked minor, but actually some of those things were a bit more substantive in terms of objectively ascertaining.
So my understanding is that there's a separate joint witness statement coming with that information in terms of, I'll call it the tidy up and the explanation for what I describe as inconsistent use of phrases as to whether that was intentional or not. My understanding is it's not contentious as between the planners and technical experts in terms of matters of clarification or drafting for consistency, and there are a number of matters to be picked up. Where is that JWS? Is that still? Right. The focus has been on priorities today. There is a draft of the refinements, the close proofread, etc. It may well be that may not be ready immediately in the morning. We'll do what we can on that, but it may be that document can be simply taken as read for what it is if it's dealing with matters of consistency and there's an explanation. Again, do we actually see what it says? There may or may not be a need to have a witness further explain that which it says. Which brings me back to what we do with drafting and what we do with Mr. De Pelsmaker in the context of the joint witness statement for priorities. I think all we can do is await the outcome, and then when we reconvene in the morning, a decision can be made as to whether the court would be assisted by hearing further explanation from Mr. De Pelsmaker, or whether we simply proceed with the legal submissions and deal with drafting through the lens of those submissions.
He should come and attend the court.
He'll certainly be here.
For the court's
And
anybody else's questions.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. So we'll leave it at that.
Oh, no, I've made a number of suggestions that will be finished tomorrow. I do think we should be. I mean, if matters arise that need further consideration, that will be what will be. But I certainly anticipate being able to get through the closing submissions and deal with if we need to call Mr. De Pelsmaker. I mean, if he started at 11 and we took an hour or an hour and a half with him, that would leave the lunch break, 12:30 to 1:30, then the rest of the day through to 5 for the closing submissions. That ought to be sufficient.
So that also presupposes that the court has it. The court can analyse it before talking to Mr. De Pelsmaker. And then the question for you, because you're getting it for the first time as well, in a sense, whether it lines up with your legal understanding and legal direction, or whether something else is spun out of the conference.
We'll just have to wait and see. It might or it might not. But in any event, in terms of drafting, we will get through to the court the drafting that will be attached to our legal submissions as soon as possible, so that you can actually look at provisions.
So then you'll be providing us a copy of what you said they ought to be considering.
Yes, or it may even be refined further. For example, today they've said, actually, we like what you did, but we'd recommend changing this bit and this bit. I may say, I hadn't thought of that, so therefore I agree. Might be that set of provisions, but what I'd like to optimistically be able to do is to attach to the submissions the version of provisions the council is ultimately pursuing. And hopefully it lines up with what's come out of the...
What's come back out of it.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, I can't see any difficulty with that. I know that we let planners draft policy, but this is really unusual because it has quite a legal content.
Yes.
And so I think it is for the joint disciplines.
Yes. And in terms of having, sort of looking back on the last couple of weeks, trying not to interfere in the process in terms of understanding what the problem that the planners were trying to solve and understanding in a sense what their key elements were that they were trying to bring through. I think the earlier processes in drafting have really assisted with that. It's then a question of, well, how do you actually draft it? And I accept drafting is that's both a dark art but a mixed discipline art. So,
All right. No, that sounds all good to me. So I've been quite comfortable with the fact that it is both disciplines. It's not, and that legal counsel should have had quite a, I think on this occasion, quite a strong direction into that framework for the planners to draft. But it's not to say lawyers can't draft, of course they can. Very good. All right, so 11 o'clock, I think, just to make sure that you, for a start. But if you could get those documents ASAP to us, I guess, in the morning, but that means about 8 o'clock, that's when we're starting. Most of us will be here by 8 o'clock, and we'll have those printed off, and we'll just start our work of reviewing. So, yeah.
So we're happy if you drip feed them, if that's more efficient than trying to get the whole nine yards together.
And so
we'd rather not be sitting here twiddling our thumbs.
Things to start at 8 a.m. If the whole package is not there by then, we'll certainly make sure that which is ready for consideration has been sent through.
Okay. So that's to provide us the JWS, which hopefully is all signed, but it's also to provide us a short memo or something. The relief that council is, or the provisions council is pursuing in relation to priorities. So we'll have both and compare and contrast to see if there are, in fact, any differences.
And the version of the objective and the rules and changes to the policies to accommodate the council position for community water supply and hydroelectricity generation.
Very good. And just apropos, next week when we start to climb into the decision, what would be really helpful is actually to get those plan provisions in a Word document.
Yes.
I've been wrestling with the...
the conversion software to PDFs, which...
And it does in cut and paste really well, and we're starting to type out everything as we go. So if there was a possible to get that in a Word document, that would actually just spare... my PA, a rather large task.
What I had hoped to be in a position to do, but I suspect we won't quite be there, is to have a Word version showing the notified version of the plan change and then the changes being pursued by the council tracked into that as a Word document.
Yeah.
And it just may be that might need to follow later this week.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, as long as it does follow, and then that is one task that... I don't need to attend to.
That's the most painful part of things if we don't get that.
Yes, and I think as part of that we'll also just send through a clean copy of the notified version as a Word document, because ultimately if the court agrees the case is made out, there may be some other matters that need to be added in.
Well, that's right, because there is a number of parties who, not least ORUG or Fishing Game Today, that are making proposals which are worthy of consideration.
Yes.
So we have that in the frame, but there's other parties as well.
Yes.
Very good. So light hand on the tabulation and the indented this, that and the others. Can that assist us from... We'll put in the formatting that we need. Yep.
Very good.
Very good. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And we're adjourned through to tomorrow at 11 o'clock. All rise.